Branch NMLS number 33041. Rick Ritman's NMLS number 664589. Equal housing lender. Some restrictions apply.
Welcome to Indy's Real Estate Gurus, brought to you by Advisors Mortgage Group and Fix-It Mortgage. Our branch NMLS is 33041. Now, here's your host, the hard-working mortgage guy, Rick Rickman.
Happy Saturday, and thank you so much for joining me. I certainly appreciate it. You know, I don't know why I was thinking about this as the music was playing, is that a few weeks ago, maybe a month and a half ago, my wife and I bought some electric bicycles. And they're not, the funny thing is, when you tell people you have an electric bike, they think that it's kind of like a motorcycle or maybe a moped, and you just get on it and it drives itself, and you know, it pedals and you don't have to. But it's not really like that. What it does is it just gives you the ability to go for longer rides, go faster, and go up hills without killing yourself. And as we've gotten older, I used to love to ride when I was younger. I've gotten older, and I had a knee injury, and you know, there's just so many things that kept me from riding. And now with an electric bike, I feel totally confident in going out and riding. Now, ours don't have, some of them have an accelerator. Ours don't. The bikes that we bought only give you any extra if you pedal. And there's four different speeds, and I won't go into all that. But what I really wanted to talk about, or what I was thinking about, is how lucky we are here in Indiana, and in central Indiana, especially with the amount of bike trails and trails that are out there and available for us to bike or walk or, you know, what, you know, get out in on these trails. It is phenomenal. I've done quite a few of them in the last few weeks, and it really, really is an amazing change in our area. Years ago, I was on the Carmel Plan Commission, and I know that at that time they were bringing a lot of these bike trails through. I didn't really understand the value of them, but I will tell you, I do now. I did even before I started riding a bike. When you drive around and you see all the trails and you start seeing all the people that are outside, there's just so many more people outside. When you ride down the Monon Trail, doesn't matter whether you're in, you know, way up north in Sheridan, or you're all the way down into Broad Ripple or down into downtown Indianapolis, the trail is full of people. There's obviously some areas that aren't as full as others, but there people are out and about and enjoying it. And I really do think, the reason I thought it goes with the real estate is because I do believe that it increases the value of our homes, because it increases the livability of our area. I think it's one of the reasons that a lot of our areas are getting nationally recognized. It's because we can get out and we can enjoy the outside, and we, you know, with on our bikes or walking on skates, you know, just there's so many ways to get out. Also, if you're somebody like me, you're getting a little older, it's a little hard to ride a bike. And heck, even if you're younger, they are a tremendous amount of fun. I would highly recommend electric bikes. I just think they're it's just so much fun to ride. Even I have my nephew, who's only 16, ride mine, and he just loved it. And he just got his driver's license, but he did really enjoy riding the bike because it's so much fun to ride, because you can really go fast and you can get around. It's a great thing, but it's just one of those things. I think it really does enhance when we have all these bicycle paths and these walking paths and we can get around. It just really makes our neighborhoods and our areas more livable and more valuable. Along with that, this is a little different, but I wanted to talk about, you know, this, when the pandemic hit, we went from working out of offices to working out of our homes. And not everybody, I didn't, but a lot of people did. And so what is it? Is it going to go away, or is it going to stay? Is this something that we're going to stay? Because, you know, if you're working out of your home, it changes what you need. As an example, my son is up in Chicago. He bought he lived in an apartment. It was a beautiful apartment, but it wasn't very big. It wasn't even a one bedroom. It was, I can't remember what they call it, but it didn't even have a bedroom. And he was by himself. And through the pandemic, he loved the place until the pandemic hit and he couldn't leave and he had to work out of his apartment. And then he spent 24 hours a day in his apartment for a while and it drove him crazy. So he and his fiance bought a house just a few months ago. Both of them were in the same position. Their apartments were small and it just was very, very difficult. And I think we're going to see, and that's an apartment. A lot of people in houses did the same thing. They went from where they were living. It was too small or it was too close and they wanted to get out in the country. So a lot of people have moved and move so that they can, you know, they have bigger spots, they have bigger places to live, they have more land, they can get out on the bicycle paths and they can get out in the neighborhoods. And we're seeing that. And so the remote workers, though, is that going to stop? Is that going to stop and change it back to the way it was where people maybe move, don't want so much space, they go to smaller houses, they go to smaller lots, they, you know, that kind of thing. Well, remote work over the next 5 years. This is a survey of hiring managers conducted by Statista and Upwork Project. 37.5% of U.S. workers will work remotely in some capacity over the next 5 years. So 37.5% of U.S. workers will be working remotely in some capacity. And of that, 22.9%, they're expecting to work fully remote, so not going into the office at all. And, you know, I've talked to people who that's what they want, that's what they enjoy, and I know I've talked to people who their companies were scared to death to do remote, and they did remote, and they were shocked because they had to, and they were shocked at the productivity. But I know that those same places, their worry is they lose the camaraderie, they lose the that piece that you really can't put your finger on in the the history of the company, the culture of the company. They're fearing losing that, which I completely understand. And so a lot of them want you to come or wanting people to come back some. So 14.6%. They're expecting to be partially remote. So maybe working 2-3 days at home and the other 2-3 days at the office so that they aren't completely out. Now, I also know that we've seen a huge increase of the homes that we have sold, the homes that we in Indiana, we've had an increase of buyers coming because they can now work out of their homes. They're leaving California. They're leaving Colorado. Those are the two biggest areas that I've seen. Chicago and New York being two others, but they're a little behind those. Those, you know, California and Colorado, of course, they're full states. We've seen a lot of those people come here, and they have, you know, our prices are phenomenal compared to what they can buy in California, our standard of living, our neighborhoods, the areas, there's not anywhere near as many people, and they can work out of their houses. So we're just seeing a lot of that. Those people, and that's that fully remote people of 22.9%. Now, not remote at all, they're expecting 62.5%. So 62.5% of us will not be able to work remote. We'll have to go in. Obviously, there are certain things that you can't do remote. You can't be a waiter and be remote. You can't, there's just certain things you can't do. I personally, I'm not one who can work from my house. Maybe I could if I had the right space, but I don't. And it's just not in my DNA, I don't think. I like to get up. I like to drive to work. I like to be a little bit away, not too far. I like to work, and I like to be somewhere when I'm working, not at my house. But that's what we're going to see. That's what their projection is for that. So working from home gives you more flexibility and more options, obviously, for a lot of people. If you fall in that category, working from home may provide you with opportunities you didn't realize you had. The ongoing rise in remote work means a portion of the workforce no longer needs to be tied to a specific area for their job. Instead, it gives those workers more flexibility when it comes to where they want to live. And that's what I was talking about, is that we're seeing people move. They still work in California, or their offices in California, or their companies in California, but they're living here, or Colorado, or in New York, or in LA, or, you know, Chicago, or Dallas, wherever it happens to be, because they can do that. If you're one of the nearly 23% of the workers who will remain 100% remote, you have the option to move to a low cost of living area, which is why a lot of people are moving here, or to a location of your dreams. So if you search for a home in a more affordable area, you'll be able to get more house for the money, of course, freeing up more options for your dedicated office space and more breathing room. You could also move to an area you've always dreamed of vacationing in, somewhere near the beach or the mountains, or simply an area that features better weather, community activities, and amenities. Without your job tying you to a specific location, you're bound to find your ideal spot. And that's a big deal. It does give a lot of flexibility to people if they don't have to come in and work in the office. If you're one of the almost 15% of the individuals who will have to partially remote or a hybrid schedule, relocating within the local area, you know, obviously if you don't have to go in every day, you might be okay living a little farther away. A home that's further away from your office could be a great choice, since you won't, you know, be going to work every day. A slightly longer commute from a more suburban or rural area could be, you know, worth the trade-off for a home with that's bigger and has more space, it's more comfortable. The other thing is with 23% of the people not going into work, and with 15% maybe working partially, that should ease up the traffic also. Of course, if they aren't working on every road that is out there like they are today. But on a normal time, you would think that it would ease up the traffic. So even if you're a little farther away, maybe the commute won't be so bad. So we are seeing a lot of people, you know, that are going to be able to stay working, not in the office, working remote or partially remote. The bottom line, if you've found what you're looking for in a house has changed due to the remote work. So if what you live in now, like for me, if I was going to do remote work, I'd have to move because I don't have a spot for me to work. It may be time to make a move. And if it is time to make a move, you know, give me a call. Email me. Actually, the best way is go to my website, hardworkingmortgageguy.com. That's hardworkingmortgageguy.com. You can call me from there, or you can email me. All my contact information there is. You can contact me directly from the website, and that we can talk about, you know, your situation. And if you're looking to make a move, we can certainly go through a pre-qualification and make sure, show you what you can afford, what we could qualify you for. And, you know, on pre-qualification, I think we should talk about that a little bit also, because it's really important that you understand that, because it is a very important piece to buying a home today. And we're going to talk about that right after the break.
You're listening to Indy's Real Estate Gurus, brought to you by Advisors Mortgage Group and Fix It Mortgage. Now back to your host, the hard-working mortgage guy, Rick Rickma.
Welcome back, and thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate it very much. We were talking about the pre-qualification. I want to talk about that in depth, because it is extremely important in this market. That pre-qualification or pre-approval letter is extremely important in you getting your offer accepted on a home. So if you're looking to buy a home, you need to get a pre-approval letter. And the pre-approval letter needs to be in much more detail than it was just a year ago, 2 years ago. Today, we always wanted to do our due diligence, but now we want to dig in even further. We want to make sure that we can give you, you know, that you're going to qualify. And along with that, we want to put it on, which is kind of the difference to me. I want to put it on your pre-approval letter. One of the things that we do is when we get all the information, we run it through an automated underwriting system, and we get an approval from a pre-approval from that automated underwriting. I put that on the pre-approval letter. It's really important that it's there to let that seller and their agent know that the file's had a basic underwrite and that it's been pre-approved. We also want to get documentation. Nobody ever wants to give the documentation too early, but we want, in this market, we want to get documentation to prove that you have the down payment and any additional funds that we need so that we can put that on the pre-approval letter, that we've verified that information. We also want the income information, and we want to make sure we can verify, we put down on that pre-approval letter that we have verified the income. So we're going to want to get that information. And we also want to run credit, and so that we can put that on the pre-approval letter. Now, all those things normally should be done anyway, but we now, it's best if we can communicate those to the seller that's been done. We want them to know that you're qualified, that you've qualified, and not only are you pre-approved, but we've done everything we can do short of having an appraisal on a house you haven't bought yet and having it completely underwritten without having a house, but we've done everything we can. And the nice thing is that when that happens, it's very, 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 very rare where if that's all done, that house doesn't close. And the only reason it wouldn't is something very odd would happen. You know, somebody loses their job, that can change it. Somebody has some other issue, you know, that comes up that wasn't expected, that can create an issue. Otherwise, if you've done those things as a pre-approval, that loan's going to close, the home's going to close, and it should close, I can't say for everybody, but with us, we're going to close it on time. If we're given a certain date, we're going to close our house when the house needs to close.
Now it's time for Questions with the Gurus.
Well, you know, this question I think is a good one, especially, you know, we're getting a tremendous amount of first-time home buyers. And Mary asked me this question when I wrote it down. It was, but I've had several people ask, and it's, what does monthly escrow refer to? And what I had done is I'd put together all her information and laid out her principal and interest, her taxes, her homeowner's insurance, you know, as an escrow. I didn't call it out specifically, mortgage insurance. And so it's a great question because it is a big expense, or can be a big expense, in your monthly payment. It can also be a big expense on your closing cost, or not your closing cost, on your closing amount. So your monthly escrow is the property taxes, the homeowner's insurance, and if there's mortgage insurance, any mortgage insurance, if there's flood insurance, any flood insurance, any of those things that are going to be escrowed into the loan. In other words, you're going to pay them monthly into the loan, and then when the taxes come due, the lender's going to make the payment for you for the taxes because you've paid it monthly. The lender's going to make the homeowner's insurance payment because you've paid it monthly. What it does is it keeps you from, after you've closed. Now, when you close on a new purchase, you have to pay the homeowner's insurance up front for the first year because there's no money there yet. And then we collect enough so that we can pay it when it comes the next year. We'll collect what we have to plus the monthly payment so we can pay it when it comes due next year. So that's what the escrow is us, the monthly escrow is us collecting that money so we can pay it when it comes due. But your homeowner's insurance, your property taxes, if there's mortgage insurance, the private mortgage insurance or monthly insurance premium, or the mortgage insurance premium, which is the FHA, or if there's flood insurance, anything like that. We're going to collect all that monthly, and then we're going to pay it when it comes due. Keeps you from making one big payment for your taxes, and then one big payment for your homeowner's insurance. Most people prefer it. Some people don't, but most people do prefer it. Now, to get out of having an escrow, you can do that. Generally, it requires 20% down. Once you put 20% down, you can get out of escrow. Sometimes that will increase your interest rate a little bit, or it may or may not. Doesn't always, but it can have an effect on your interest rate. It's just one of those things we'd want to talk about and see how it's going to affect you if you don't want to escrow. But again, there's very little benefit in not escrowing. Some people like to have the control, or they've had somebody mess up their escrow, or they don't want somebody else holding their money. The escrows, years and years ago, and I think this is why people don't, a lot of times don't want it, because they don't realize that it's not the same as it was. But years and years ago, they would, the lenders would mess with the escrow. And when I say that, they might, they actually could earn interest on the escrow. So they would, they'd play around with it. The law changed 20 years ago, 25 years ago, maybe longer than that. It's been a long time. Nobody messes with escrow. If they do, it is way too painful because the government has put in laws to keep that from happening, which is a good thing. And nobody, the bank can't earn interest on the escrow money. It just sits there. So there's no reason to hold on to it. It just doesn't make any sense. So escrowing is, in my opinion, it's what I do. It's the easiest thing to do. I understand why some people don't, but if you aren't sure and you don't really care, I would highly consider, think about escrowing, because it's a lot easier. You don't have to come up with a bunch of money all at one time. But that's a long way to say, you know, that's what escrow is. It's your monthly property taxes, homeowners insurance, flood insurance if there is any, mortgage insurance if there is any. And, you know, we were talking about the mortgage insurance, so I want to go into that a little bit, because there are different types of mortgage insurance, and a lot of people don't really understand it. Most people hear of PMI, that's private mortgage insurance. And you have to have private mortgage insurance on a conventional mortgage if you don't have 20% equity in the home. So if you're buying a home and you're putting less than 20% down, there's going to be private mortgage insurance. Now, there are ways, some lenders will increase their rate a little bit to cover the, and then you don't have private mortgage insurance. And they're self-covering it, basically. But understand, if they increase the rate, that's what the rate is going to be for the entire length of time you have the loan, compared to mortgage insurance, which can go away as soon as you're in an 80% loan to value. So short term, it might be the best option. Long term, it may not be the best option. I'm not saying it is or isn't. I'm saying you need to run the numbers. And that's one of the things I do, is I always run numbers for anything that we're looking at doing. Now, we don't increase that. You know, we don't do it that way, but if you had somebody that was, we could look at it and see what's going to be your best option. Because you want to make the decision that actually is the best option, but you have to have it in front of you so you can see it in the numbers so you know which is your best option. The other, you have the PMI, private mortgage insurance. There's also something called mortgage insurance premium. Now, mortgage insurance premium is FHA's mortgage insurance, and they're not private, they're government, so they aren't PMI, private mortgage insurance, they're mortgage insurance premium, and that's the FHA. Now, on your FHA, you also have not just the monthly mortgage insurance premium, but you also on an FHA have upfront mortgage insurance. So there's mortgage insurance that's charged up front. That amount is added to the loan amount. You don't bring it, but it's added to the loan amount. But you do pay that up front. And on a private mortgage insurance, PMI, you can do that monthly, or you can do what's called single premium, which means you just pay it all at one time up front. Now, again, these are things I run the numbers on. We want to look at them and see what's going to be your best option. And so you don't necessarily, and it does depend on, when you look at this, it does depend on how long you're going to have the mortgage, which is either when do you think you're going to refinance it again, or when do you think you're going to sell the house? Because you got to look at that over time and see which is going to be your best option and which is the least risk to you. For the mortgage insurance. So we want to run those numbers. Always look at that, because you really have to know what the numbers are so you can make the proper decision. And again, if you want to look at any of those, you want to look at pre-qualifying for a mortgage, you want to look at refinancing a home, just go online to hardworkingmortgageguy.com. All my contact information is there, or you can call me from, you can see, get my number there. You can get my email address there. You can contact me directly from my website, and we can talk about any of the information that you want to talk about. I also today wanted to talk about the three insights that show this isn't a housing bubble. I've talked about this on other shows, but I do want to talk about this. Everything you hear is a housing bubble. It's a housing bubble. It's a housing bubble. And this comes from one of the services that I use, and The number one, they're saying the housing market isn't driven by risky mortgage loans. Back in 2006, there were very risky mortgage loans. Nearly everyone could qualify for a mortgage. It used to laugh because you'd say, well, if you know they're breathing, they can get a mortgage. There were people who couldn't rent. They couldn't qualify to rent, but they could buy a home. There was a builder in town. I won't mention their name. They're no longer in business, but they sold a ton of homes and were kind of a star in the business because they sold so many homes, but they sold them to people who couldn't qualify for renting a home many times or renting an apartment. But they could go buy a house. They had very bad credit, but they could under these the terms that were available, so they would, and they weren't very good terms. Some of them never made the first payment. They realized that they didn't have to make a payment. They could live in the home for a year or more. So many of them, they're not many, some of them didn't even make a payment. Some of them did, and they got stuck in these mortgages where they had, which this is one of the things that happened, they had what's called a prepayment penalty. This is something I want to clarify too. On a conventional mortgage or an FHA, you cannot have a prepayment penalty. You will never see one on a conventional or an FHA in today's market. They're not allowed to. You can see them on other products, non-conforming products, but you won't see them on FHA or conventional. I get that question a lot. Does this have a prepayment penalty? Nobody's going to give you a prepayment penalty. Doesn't hurt to ask, but nobody's going to give you a prepayment penalty if you're doing a conventional mortgage or an FHA. So they had prepayment penalties, and they were all ARMs, which is an adjustable rate mortgage, meaning that the rate would go up. So maybe you started your actual rate, your first year was 6%, your second year was 8%, your third year was 10%, and your prepayment penalty was for 3 years. And then a lot of this was new homes. So you buy a new home, and in Indiana, we pay taxes in our property taxes in arrears. So not only that, 2 years later, the property taxes kicked in, the interest rate went up 2%, and your payment went up, and you could barely afford it when you started. And that's created a tremendous amount of problems for people. So that was part of what happened in that market, and that we aren't seeing today. In 2006, mortgage origination, so the FICO score, so your credit score, you know, you'd think I could remember something that I talk about every day. But the credit score, you know, today we really have to have over a 620. Back then they were financing people with low 500s. So there's a lot of things there. Homeowners aren't using their homes as an ATM this time either. We aren't just increasing our loan amount. 38% of the refinances right now are cash out. 89% in 2006 were cash out. And our homes are selling. They're selling quickly. We have tons of equity. There's just nothing that would indicate that we're in a housing bubble, not like we were last time. Hopefully that makes sense. If you have any questions on a mortgage, you want to talk about anything we've talked about today, you want to refinance or purchase, you need a pre-approval, you're looking for a real estate agent, want to talk about who might be a good agent to work with, please go online to hardworkingmortgageguy.com. That's hardworkingmortgageguy.com. You can contact me from there, or you can look up my phone number or my email address on my website. Contact me and I'll get back with you. And again, I appreciate it very much, and I hope you have a great weekend.